All right, hello world. It is Saturday, November 11th, 2023, Veterans Day. He is Alfredso Nash. I am Dr. Joseph J. Burt Miller Jr., and we are your hosts for the Cyber Coffee Hour. We are two cyber experts from Mount Vernon, New York, sharing with you our experiences in this field and also the experiences of others so we all can learn, elevate, and ultimately realize that we all belong in this space. Alfredso, how you doing, brother?
Good, brother. How you doing? Again, yes, happy Veterans Day to everyone out there that served. We are recording on Veterans Day, so shout out to everyone that served. I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. And yes, today is I think it's a perfect day to record. You know, like I said, Veterans Day. Me being a veteran myself, 4 years with the Air Force, I definitely have a great appreciation for our veterans, our servicemen and women who have served or are currently serving. Definitely want to say, you know, happy Veterans Day. I salute you. Salute you all. All right.
So, yeah, let's go and unpack that. I mean, you said you're an Air Force veteran. Can you share some of your experiences and how they might be related to your current cyber journey today?
Yeah, absolutely. So kind of even going back, I think this even ties back to even high school, actually.
Nice.
Because the Air Force Junior ROTC program had started, you know, back in Mount Vernon High School. And at that time, it was a new idea. It was a new program being instituted. And I had to give credit to my mom because she brought me down to that sign-up table. So, yo, we're doing this. So I was like, all right. So, and, you know, needless to say, doing that, I didn't know how much it would have an impact in my life, even up till now, because just from all the experiences I've learned, you know, just like the field trips that I go into DC and stuff like that. And also just learning everything about the Air Force, even aircraft. And we had some great leadership, our great instructors during that time, just really preparing you, you know, getting you in that mental state for the military. Even if you weren't going to join it, it still gives you that mentality in you as you're preparing. So one thing I did learn was that, you know, if you do at least 3 years of junior ROTC, that actually counts as credit if you do decide to join the military, you know, after high school. And after you finish basic training, instead of starting out as a, airman basic, especially if you don't have any college credit, because you get paid according to your rank. So an airman basic, that's like no stripes on your sleeve. At least for the Air Force. I know different branches have their rank insignia at different spots. But for the Air Force, it's on the sleeve. But for me, doing all 4 years of Air Force Junior ROTC, that allowed me to max out. So I started out as an Airman First Class. So I had a nice little bump of money. And then from there, it really set me up, you know, just for the future, because, you know, doing that and then also just, you know, starting with the Air Force, I had every intention of becoming almost a lifer. I wanted to be an officer when I was in the military. But at the time, when it came towards the end of my first term after the 4 years, the Air Force at the time had a program called force shaping, and what that is essentially is I had to decide whether to cross train to a different career field or accept an honorable discharge, and this was the Air Force's way to try to, I guess, even out some of the need for, I guess, personnel in different career fields that needed more people. So, you know, at the time, I was young, and you know, the only thing I was thinking about, like, man, I don't want to go to tech school again. So I was like, I'll take the honorable discharge.
So hold on. So force shaping, was that was the Air Force curving out where they were putting personnel at the time, or was that something that was kind of like we're shrinking down our effort and moving it to another focus?
Right. Yeah. It was the Air Force's way to like to balance out the landscape of like personnel amongst, you know, career fields that maybe that was short of like that needed more people in those certain jobs. So yeah. So like I said, like for me, because when I joined the Air Force, I did HVAC. I didn't do IT. I wasn't really exposed to IT yet. I was doing HVACs, and HVAC is heat and ventilation, air conditioning. So I was an HVAC technician. Definitely learned a lot. Definitely is a great trade, great skill, especially as a homeowner. You know, so many skills that really combine into one. Because not only you learn about, like I said, heat and AC, you also learn how to do electrical and plumbing. And again, you're able to kind of, you know, translate that to just even many jobs around the house. Certain things that, you know, may go wrong, you're more mechanically inclined to be able to do those things for yourself and, you know, save yourself a lot of money ultimately, especially, you know, this day and age. That's, you know, I think we're all trying to save some money. So
yeah, very cool.
But yeah, so I did, you know, 4 years. My first duty station was in Osan Air Base, Korea. Had a lot of fun there. Spent a year there, then came back to the States to finish out my term at McGuire Air Force Base in South Jersey. So I definitely had a lot of fun. I enjoyed my time there. I think I definitely wanted more, to be honest with you. I definitely could have seen myself being a, you know, 20 plus year, even maybe 30 plus year. I don't know. But you know, that's the way things shook out for me. But like I said, we'll see. You never know. You know, things may change for the future. So, you know, maybe different opportunities may come up. But for right now, yeah, that's where I'm at.
Okay, so knowing you a little bit, for our listeners, let's bolt on that experience in the Air Force and try to see, where did you start your learning of IT from that journey?
Yeah, so really my very early experience learning IT was really from my uncle. So my uncle Baswick in New Jersey at the time. So when we were still living in New York, so my father's brother, at the time we would, it was like little mini trips, because going from New York to Jersey didn't really take long.
We'd go road trips. New Jersey.
Yeah. I used to love it, man. We had the minivan. I sit in the back and, you know, just chill out. But no, I always look forward to going, because whenever we visited my uncle, so he was an IT technician. Honestly, I don't really recall what his official title was, but I knew he was, you know, into computing. And
in New Jersey.
Sorry. In New Jersey.
Okay.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So as we took like about an hour road trip going there, like I say, we're going to house and like, I just see computer parts all over the place.
Nice.
And, yeah, man. And, you know, being young, I was very inquisitive and, you know, I would always ask about, you know, like I said, I see printers, towers, you know, cause these are all things that he was doing repairs for. And, so as he was working on them, I just asked, you know, just ask him questions on it. And, you know, honestly, I'm just very thankful that, you know, he didn't tell me to get out of here, kid. You're bothering me. Like,
right. Go kick rocks, nephew.
Right. He definitely took the time to explain things to me. And that stuck with me, that resonated with me. And honestly, that fed my curiosity for me to learn things on my own. I was tinkering with like old computers, you know, back home and taking them apart, seeing how they work. That even led to me even starting up like my own little side hustle after I got out the military, and when my first civil government position was working at the Veterans Affairs Hospital in New Jersey. Mm. So again, I was still doing HVAC. This is not IT yet. Still doing HVAC as my primary role. Had a love. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. Can we pause it? So HVAC was your way into the VA job, but it wasn't an IT job.
Correct. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Very cool.
Yeah. So when I joined, it was through HVAC, because I was using the experience I had from the Air Force.
Mm.
I had a little break in between. Like I was doing like general maintenance, like at the time for like the apartment I lived in at the time. But yeah, well, when I got my first civil government position, at the East Orange VA, that was through for HVAC.
Nice.
So I was still doing HVAC primarily. And, but again, I still had a love for IT, a curiosity for IT. I still want to learn. So like, so yeah, so just taking from what I learned from my uncle and, you know, kind of building off of that, I started up like my own little side hustle. Like I was really professional with it too. I even created like my own like work order sheet. Like, so I was doing like, so I was doing like PC repair for folks. And, so like, you know, just nothing too crazy, but like, you know, laptop repair mainly, people had issues with. And I remember one issue. I think I remember this one lady, she asked me to fix her laptop because her kid had a toy in the laptop and closed the laptop lid on it. So it just messed up the screen. So she was getting ready to buy a whole new, you know, laptop. I was like, no, you don't need to do that. You know? So, you know, I took her home, researched it, you know, got the replacement screen, changed it out, tested it. Good to go. Wrote up the specs, wrote up the invoice, and, you know, a satisfied customer. So, and I think also too, doing that really, you know, built up my confidence within the field, knowing to say, okay, this is something I could really do. So just having that curiosity, that determination, you know, not necessarily needing anyone to say, hey, you should do this or that. It was just really on my own, just something. And I have to say the influence from, again, I give a lot of credit to my uncle because it wasn't necessarily like he was out like purposely, you know, like teaching me on purpose. He was just doing what he do, but I was able to see it and be exposed to it. And like, again, as I said, that really sparked my curiosity and making me want to get into that. So
That sounds very cool. So that curiosity was sparked in your day job, let's say, which you also turned into a side hustle for not just the monetary side. You had a genuine interest in how to do the IT stuff, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that sounds cool, man.
And what pushed me to really, you know, to now just say I want to get into IT professionally. So while I was still doing HVAC, so I worked at the VA doing HVAC at least 5 years or so, and during this time I was studying for my bachelor's, computer information systems.
Nice. Where were you studying?
St. Leo University. So cool, online man. School. Cool. They're based out in Florida.
Oh, okay, cool, man.
So during this time I was studying for my bachelor's degree. And I definitely recall a time when I was working with one of our operators, and I remember his name, but I don't know if I want to put him out there. But
no, let's save his privacy for that. I'll put you on.
But you know, but the funny thing is, I think he even gave me some push too to get out because I'm getting to that. So I remember. We're sitting down, and you know, one of the operators, he had one of those like those pill separators, you know, that have like the pills like for each day,
right?
And mind you, this is me, I don't know, like in like early 20s, you know. So this is after I came back from Korea, and now, you know, working at this is after Air Force, this is the VA. So I'm, like I said, I'm in my 20s, young. And, you know, I'm asking him, say, you know, what are you doing with that? Like, what do you take that for? And he's like, oh man, I take this for pain every day.
So oh,
I
wow.
Like, I was like, no.
This is at the VA.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So that's, what I was like, you know, I gotta go because, and then also too, like contractors that work with us, you know, from time to time, I see them, you know, coming to work, just limping some all different type of ailments because, While HVAC is a great trade.
Yeah, sorry. Yep, you got it.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. While HVAC is a great trade, it does take a lot out of you. It is a physical, demanding job, especially right. in the summertime. You know, I have to lug like heavy compressors, heavy tools, dealing with different chemicals. You know, you do have to be careful, make sure you are wearing your proper PPE. It can take a toll on your body. You know, I think it is a young man, young woman's game. But after a while, you know, as you get older, I don't think that's something. Now, if maybe on the management side, yes. But if you're still out there doing the physical labor portions, it can really break you down. And I was kind of foreseeing that. Just like I said, just seeing some of the older guys at the shop coming in, I was like, I gotta make moves. So I started really ramping up. I started coming to work with my book bag on, with my books, just studying. I was studying like during my lunch, like any free time I had. It was to the point where my supervisor, he was calling me professor because I was reading my books all the time.
Hey, that's funny you say that. I have a story. I'll tell you a separate story about that. But yeah, I can relate to that. That would make somebody sharpen up. Like, what's that kid doing over there?
Yeah, man. But it was just showing my motivation. I was, you know, I knew I was determined to, you know, to really get out of it. While I appreciated that part of my life, you know, going through that, learning that trade, but I knew that's not something I want to do for the rest of my life either. So with that said, I was studying, and then also I was applying for jobs, you know, internally within the hospital, within the VA.
Nice.
And I was getting rejected a lot. It was to the point where I almost gave up because I was getting rejections. I don't know, these rejection letters. I was getting like, I don't know, like 7-8 rejection letters. And I was like, man, I don't think I'm going to make it.
And this is internally. So you're a HVAC personnel. You're schooling up. So I'm assuming you adjusted the resume and all that. And then you said, all right, let me hit it internal and go for the different. How did you identify the different roles internally, if you don't mind?
Yeah. So I was, you know, of course, was utilizing, you know, good old USA Jobs. You
okay.
know,
okay.
Looking at seeing the jobs that were coming out. And each time I saw these IT specialist positions, you know, I was definitely catering, you know, tailoring my resume for that. And also, too, as I was doing that, definitely trying to skill up each time, trying to, you know, enhance my skills so I can be a stronger candidate during that time as I was applying. And it wasn't until like that last time where like when I was really on the brink of saying, man, I don't think I'm gonna make it, I kept doing it anyway.
And then I finally got through.
I had the interview. The interview went really well. It was like a panel. I think it was like, I mean, this is years ago now, so bear with me. I think it was like at least 3 people on the panel. But I do recall they said they did like my answers. And then I remember I was with my one of my best friends I served in the Air Force with, Steve Remy. We were going off campus for lunch. Cause typically we'll go out for lunch usually on Fridays. That was like our treat day. And
nice.
And I remember we were out and I got a call from HR and they told me that I got the position. I was like, yo, man, I almost cried because I just remember all those rejections leading up to that, and then to finally get that now. I think that's what made me appreciate it even more. Because I think if I just got it on the first try, I don't think I would have had that same appreciation or say, you know, I really worked for this. I really felt it because honestly, man, I almost felt like quitting, like legit. Like I thought, I was like, man, I guess I'm not good enough for this. I don't know. But I kept working and I kept pushing through, and I finally got over, got over that hill, I should say. And I remember my first supervisor, Gary Giordano. He was my first supervisor, one who gave me a chance. And I've all throughout my career, I've always kept up with him. I mean, now he's retired.
Okay, good, because we were name dropping, you know.
he's retired, but he knows. I mean, and I share this to say it is important to recognize those who've helped you along the way, those who give you a chance, those who, like I said, who see potential in you. And he was, Gary was definitely one who definitely showed that potential. He saw potential in me. He always gave me great advice. One of the things he always told me to, pursue my certifications. I may be paraphrasing now, but he would tell me that to be so good that it'll be hard for someone to say no.
Yeah, I like that.
So I've always kept that in my mind, and like I said, he gave me a chance. He would assign me to projects, different jobs, where a lot of older guys that I work with, they're like, oh man, I won't do that. You know, they reject it. And me, being new, being green, I was like, who am I to reject, any jobs? Because this is how I learned. This is how you get better. This is how you get your experience.
Yeah.
You got to do it. You got to do the work. So, I mean, it's, whenever the something came up, I raised my hand, like, all right, I'll do it. You want me to do this conference? Okay, I'll do it. You know, whatever it was, man, like, just getting that experience, because may not understand it at that point in time, but it'll definitely serve you as you progress in your career. And those are the things that really helped me, to this day now, just getting out there, don't hesitate, definitely, as we, like I said, do what you got to do to get that experience. And also too, as you are making moves, making strides to help others that are coming up along the way as well. Because again, I needed help. I had people who helped me as I progressed through each stop of my career. So who am I to shut the door on people coming up behind me? So, it is something that I definitely always lean on. I think we need more of that within this industry, because I think Alfredso, we've seen probably our fair share of like gatekeeping as it pertains to this industry, as we're talking about cybersecurity. And that's something we want to change, man, because there are people who are very hungry, who want to learn, who want to do great things within this field, but they're not getting the chance to do it.
I totally agree. It's humbling to even hear you saying the drive factor, and not to cuss you, sorry about that.
It's
humbling to hear you say the drive factor, because, just like we said in the last episode, for a long time, I felt like, I was the only one really signing up for the stuff other people didn't want to do, or, and I see the parallels too. Like, I respect the mindset, and like, when somebody else didn't want to do it, you kind of stepped in and was like, all right, I need to learn this, let me go do it. So that's something, like, even when we came together to do the other episode, I didn't realize that until now. That's the linking point, right? That's the linking point. We're both in that same mindset, so that's pretty interesting.
How did that play?
So from that first IT job, how did that, I guess, evolve into your cybersecurity experience today?
Sure. So I took out the job, my first IT job, was IT specialist. I was like a GS9.
So wait, back up for those of us that might be listening. I know it. I know I could figure it out what that is. Could we break down the GS9 there?
Right. So within the government, we are on a set pay scale. GS, that stands for general schedule. It's standardized pay scale sets set out by OPM. So you can always look it up, opm.gov. Right. It's really no secret. You could see, like, once you know what somebody's like GS level is, you can look it up and see what they're making. Now, It's a GS level, then a step. There's like increments within each level. So so for example, it could be like GS9, step 3. So then there's a chart again, it's all on opm.gov. You can look it up. It's nice. Like that, no secret.
Yep. Yep.
You can look it up and see what that person is making. Now there may be little variances. It may be that individual may have like a different incentives that will not show on the scale, but you can still get a general sense of, you know, what they'd be averaging, you know, or a ballpark figure more or less. So for me at that time, I started as a GS9. I believe back then, I don't know, maybe like 60K. Maybe. Before I can remember.
Right. And that was your baseline and position and salary now, right? That's what right. you were at the, got it. Okay.
So then after that, kind of moving on, I stayed there for about a year and some change, year and a half, maybe, moved to Nebraska. I worked at the VA hospital there. I was doing a lot of research. I was doing HVAC for the research department there. I stayed there, I don't know, probably like another year and a half, maybe. Then I went over to work at Offutt Air Force Base in Omaha, Nebraska. There I served as a system administrator.
What?
So I was supporting the contracting squadron while I was there. It's the 55th contracting squadron. So it was myself and my coworker. It was just us two against the world. So we stayed in the server room. Mind you, in a server room, AC is running all year round, you know, all seasons. So you got to bundle up, you know, during the winter. And I will say, I think that is when I did have, I guess, optical issues as far as, what I mean by that is, because of the constant AC or exposure to that, it did cause my eyes to dry out, like, like get redness and things like that. But I mean, I'm fine now, but, it just made me remember that. But my coworker at the time, he was great. I was so glad to work with him because he has so much knowledge, and I was just being able to be with him every day, just learn from him and just watch what he do, and you know, and also that's again just other ways of how you get better. Just work, you know, being around people who are doing more and just learn from them, watching them, ask questions. Don't just sit there and just, you know, just think it's going to work out. Like if you're unsure about something, ask,
right?
Because I think a lot of people, they are willing to help out, you know, but you got to put yourself out there and then, you know, just say, hey, I need help on this, or can you show me how to do this, with, you know, whatever the case is.
Would you say that's a parallel today, is having that person that can, basically we know it as on the job training, but would you say that parallel still exists, or is what built up your experience in cybersecurity today? Or are you becoming that person that answers the questions now?
I've definitely become the person that is answering the questions.
Right.
But also too, I'm still asking as well.
Right.
But I have noticed there is a maybe impatience in the field now.
Oh, I mean to laugh, but yeah, you're right. I'm one of them too, you know.
Yeah, I think being able to let people fail is not, I don't want to say tolerated, but it's. That's why I kind of lean towards impatient.
Right.
I don't think there's a patience for it anymore, which I think is not helpful because, mm-hmm. I mean, people who are, like I said, people who are hungry, who want to learn, I mean, they're going to fail. They're going to stumble.
You know?
But when you do fail and stumble, you learn from that, and that's how you get better. But if you're not allowing someone to do that or giving them a little bit of leash to let them fail, and also as you're doing that, you're teaching and helping them along the way. If we're not doing that, we're not, especially if the grand vision is for us to have a very strong cyber workforce, if we're not helping those who that want to be helped, that want to do the work, and like I said, they're not going to be cyber experts right out the gate. They're not going to be experts right out from college, or, you know, or even after just one certification. Like, I think it really comes down to, you know, being in the field, getting that experience, getting real experience, and you know, like I said, kind of failing through. And right. And you know, as you're getting through it, you get better. You learn from others, learn from those who have been doing it longer than you. Work with them, watching them, you know, like I said, like OJT, you know, on the job training for those uninitiated. But yeah, I think that's disappointing, I'd say, because I think that discourages even like, you know, people who do want to get in this field, but they may feel like it's intimidating because they're not learning it fast enough.
Right.
So,
yeah. from your initial role with the folks that helped you learn the specialist role, where was the cut over to, hey, now I want to specialize in cybersecurity? Which opportunities, based on your experience, got you from the you said IT specialist GS9 through to where you are today? And you don't have to go exactly into much details, because I know, but for our listeners, yeah, where did your cutoff in standard, or like I like to say, traditional IT, start meeting that track and training to getting into cybersecurity?
Yeah, it would have to be right after I finished at Offutt. And then, so I'd leave an Offutt and then get in a position at DC3, and that's the DoD Cybercrime Center in Maryland. That from that point on, that's where I got into cyber, really loving the field, get exposed to a lot of great work. I'm still doing like sysadmin work, but getting to work with analysts, cyber analysts in the field, you know, learn again, just being a sponge and absorbing, man, because you don't even have to like necessarily be working that particular job, but being close to them and watching them, you could learn a lot too, you know, just being like a room, same room, or even, you know, next door to some of those folks who are doing some great work. Just being exposed to that's a great benefit. And I say even a privilege, because you're getting almost free training, I'd say, because, you know, because like I said, and also too, you can, you know, pull one of those guys and gals to the side and just ask questions.
While you grab a cup of coffee and hash it. Right. No, right.
Serious.
Yeah, I get it.
You could be having lunch with someone outside, and you know, you don't even work with them necessarily. You may have two different job descriptions, but you guys in the same building and you could learn from each other. You know what I'm saying? And be like, oh, maybe that's something I want to do. Maybe that's something I want to try to, you know, cross over into. As you learn from it, you know. So yeah, I definitely had a great experience working at DC3, and then from there moved on to DHS, Homeland Security in Virginia. Now there, I was doing more. It kind of deviated a bit from the cyber focus, because I was doing more with biometrics, which is a great field, great area. But it wasn't fully cyber.
Gotcha.
But it's still, you know, that experience was still good, still helped me. And then I served about 5 years there at DHS. And then my last 2 years, I worked as a project manager, IT project manager, there before.
So you run the full gauntlet. So you went from, yeah, IT specialist, sysadmin. What did you do at DC3 again?
Sysadmin as well.
Sysadmin. So you double dipped in that. And then you came on at DHS. What was the role again? You came from a sysadmin role into the biometric focus. Were you still a sysadmin?
No, like program analyst.
Okay, programmer. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and then from there, So after my time there, then to my current position with the NSA.
So wait, time out. Just pause for that.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go. Let's get back. So all right. So now we're talking, right? So you went from 5 years. Congratulations on that, because that's something I'll say for all the listeners. I haven't even gotten 5 years, right? 5 years. It seems to be that baseline of like, I know where everything's going. I know how to do this thing. I know where I exist in this thing and who I can train, right? So for me, yo, kudos, pat yourself on the back for that, because a lot of folks don't even make it to that 5-year baseline, I like to say. So you hit 5 years, and then you said, all right, program analyst, then you went to project manager. What brought your interest from that into project management? So how did you get interested in that? Man, before we even talk about the other one, because I didn't even think he was going to mention that. So.
That's actually funny. There's a funny story attached to that. So before I got into project management, as I was doing biometrics, it wasn't necessarily cyber, and I still had a desire to get back in a more cyber-centric environment. And at the time, I remember I was like looking for like detail roles, and a detail is like, you know, you're doing like a temporary, you're working in a different position for like a temporary period of time, but you still belong to the role that you were hired on, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So you're working temporarily in other areas so you can gain experience in that job, but you still belong officially to, like I said, the job you were hired on. So the job I was hired on to do was biometrics, but I was looking for details into cyber where I can, you know, work maybe 4-6 months or so out of the year and gain that experience. And I could legitimately put on my resume, because I worked in that field, you know, worked in that area for a period of time. So I remember I was just making connections, and so talking with some contacts at big DHS. When we say big DHS, that's like the headquarters in DC.
So in private sector, we would say enterprise, or I give you a sense. So that's the big entity over everybody else.
Right.
Gotcha. Right. Okay. Okay.
So yeah, I was talking. So they had a ISSO detail.
Ding, ding, ding. It makes sense now.
And those who don't know, that's an information system security officer. Hmm. So they had a detail for that. I spoke with the person I was heading out that program. He looked at my resume. He was ready to bring me on. He was excited. So of course, I still belong to my biometrics role. So I had to get permission from my supervisor. And, you know, mind you, I had no issue with my supervisor. We had a great relationship. So I was like, okay, that's all I got to do. Just like, she has to sign off.
That's it? So okay. Like, boss battle? Cool. Okay.
So I'm like, I'm gonna go and talk to my supervisor and, explain to her. And I think we should be good to go. Because everything was good to go with big DHS side. They were ready for me and everything like that. And again, in my mind, I was like, man, this is really what's going to get me on track to, like I said, getting back more into a cyber focus environment. So I bring it to my supervisor, and she was like, nah.
Oh, like, wait a second. Like, so yeah. Wait a minute. Now we're talking, Joseph. So you went to your previous supervisor. Got blessed in and said, okay, yeah, you can make that transition. So now you're on the other side.
No. She didn't know you.
Oh, okay. Okay. Got it.
I needed her sign off.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
In order to, because that means I have to leave my current position. I forget how, it was like 4 or 6 months. I can't remember. So you had to get sign off.
Gotcha. Okay.
So my supervisor permission was the last piece. Everything else.
Oh man. See, that's the one that gets me, man. That's the one that gets me too, man. Like, wow. Okay.
So I, um, Yeah, I go in and ask, you know, like I said, I bring it up to her and say, hey, you know, this is a position. And mind you, I like it. This is something, it wasn't necessarily new. Like I've always been saying that I want to get back in a more cyber centric role. And she was like, nah. And the reason was because she was putting me in for, to work as the assistant project manager role for our, like a biometric capability program. I don't want to put out the name, but it was to work that project, for DHS. And, because our current, well, at the time, the person that was in that position, she was leaving. And so it opened up and I had no clue, you know, you know, it wasn't necessarily a really an interest of mine to say to, you know, that's why I was looking at. Because, again, my focus was on,
cyber.
Like I said, making the contacts with, like, other folks doing, especially this ISSO detail.
Right.
And so I'm not even thinking about, you know, that.
Project so management. Yeah. So wait, we gotta unpack that, too. So for anybody that wants to listen or might want to know, when I hear project management, you know, I hear your PMO. I hear the business analysts, I hear the scrum masters, I might even hear project lead on the non-government side, right? Because I'm still doing it in my career too, to map these different, I guess, specialties. When I hear project manager, it encompasses all of those roles. What was the differentiator or the line drawn between the person leaving, the program analyst leaving, and those roles I just mentioned? Was it just you do everything, or that person was doing everything?
No. So that person who left. So she was a assistant. She was the assistant project manager. I was still take over, and I was replacing her, like taking her over her role.
And that was called a program analyst.
No. This was the project manager.
Project manager. Wow. Okay. I missed that.
My previous. So when I was doing the biometrics, that was the program analyst role.
Got it.
But then. Getting over to kind of almost like being voluntold for this position. This was project management now.
Got it.
So this is like for the last 2 years of my time at DHS.
And that's a whole different track than even the previous role. Yeah. Okay. Got it. Wow.
So this is completely different. I've never been interested in project management before ever. So,
right.
But, no, she put me in for it. She felt I would, you know, I could handle it and I have to be honest, man. Like I was mad at her.
This is like reason, starting to level over, right?
Because,
sorry.
It's because, you know, I was like right there. I was like, I was really about to get to that. Like I said, that position. I think that I felt I was going to really get me on track for really what I want to do. And she, it was kind of like she was just standing away and, you know, kind of preventing that. So, yeah, to be honest.
We know that level up tactic. Yeah. This is legit what we're talking about. That's a perfect example, Joseph. Yeah, this is the boss battle right here. Yeah. was the boss battle.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but no, for a while, honestly, I was you know, upset, but then, you know, I was in my feelings. I ain't gonna lie. I was
salty and whatnot. I get you. I get it, man. I understand you. I understand.
But then eventually, you know, I got over it. Cause like, no, okay, now this is the job I gotta do. So now I just gotta reset and, get ready for this. So as I'm working with, one thing I did benefit from was that the person who I was taking over from, I did have some lead time before she left. So I was able to work with her. She was able to share some things, some tactics that she's used in the role to help me to, you know, to get started, you know, maybe the different teams or like the different POCs who I need to be in contact with for this aspects of the project. Mm. So that helped, you know, immensely. And she, you know, even mentioned like different trainings I should get involved with to help me. So I do recall, like, you know, as I got started and now she's gone, I'm officially in the role and, you know, just sitting in like a couple of like the briefings and meetings and stuff like that. And I'm just hearing all the, you know, this project management lingo. And I'm like, yo, I have no idea what you're talking about. It's a whole different language.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I'm like, yo, I said, if I'm going to really do this, be proficient in this, I got to get smart in it. And that's, you know, so that equated to me going for the PMP, the project management professional certification, because that was, as far as within project management, that's like the gold standard for project management. So,
got it.
So I spoke with my training department, and those listening, you know, as when you do get in your role, leverage your training department. Don't pay for these certs and classes yourself.
Ditto, bingo. I get, especially if the company has, you know, the ability to train out and send you to school. Yeah, don't pay for it up front.
Absolutely.
Yep.
So once in my training department, say, hey, there's this boot camp for PMP. I want to get this, so help me to, you know, strengthen my skills as I'm in this role. So they approved it. So I started the class, did a week long. Those who've taken project management, boot camp courses before, it's pretty much the same. Like, they give you a ton of information for like over like the course of like 4 or 5 days, and at the end they expect you to take the test. There's no way that sounds like a take the exam.
Yeah, that sounds like a separate episode too. I'm not a huge fan of the boot camps. I mean, because of the pace, the expectation, the monetary obligation, there's a lot more stakes than they tell you up front.
They're expensive. They're expensive. Yeah, it's a lot of info, especially if it's the first time seeing that material. It's going to be very overwhelming.
Yeah.
But again, the department paid for it, so I was okay. But I know there are those who do lean on those project boot camps, and they're paying out of pocket. It is a lot of money, man. There's really no ways to get around it. It is a lot. So I did that. And then they asked me at the end of the week to say, are you ready to take exams? Like, man, no way. So I just started just studying on my own, but then I knew, just being honest with myself, I wasn't studying consistently for it to stick, and I needed some sort of structure. And that's what led to me starting the study hall on Discord.
So now that circles. We'll circle back to that too. We have to probably cover that on another one. It makes sense now.
I can go more in depth with that. Yeah, like I said, for a different episode. But that's what got me. That's how I passed it after spending time with the Discord and those who were on it. So after doing that, I passed the exam and then while at work at DHS, I just started, as I'm forming relationships with people knowing me to be in the position now, and getting used to the person who was in the role, that now that she's gone, I think everyone is getting adjusted to that. I just started feeling more getting in my groove, as time go on, getting more experience, just learning. I was feeling more confident in the role. I felt more proficient, I'm hearing that terminology. It didn't sound so foreign to me anymore. Now I know what it means. And even having the material, the books and everything like that, I was able to even look it up, so that helps a lot too.
That's the armor I'm talking about. That, by the way, yeah, that is definitely the armor for sure.
Yeah. So having those books, reading up on it, I just, like I said, being able to be more proficient in the role and working through it. Just fast forward, like I said, 2 years, and then that led to me, put it in for, well, truth be told, the NSA was not my first choice.
And listeners, we'll break for intermission. Go ahead, unpack that, man.
My, I guess, quote unquote dream job was to work at CISA, and that's the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency. So they're like the cyber arm of DHS. So I was applying to there, almost for like a year. I was getting interviews and stuff like that, but I just wasn't getting over the hump.
So it's like the beginning of the career too. It's coming back. Yeah, I see.
So I wasn't getting through. And mind you, at this point in time, I had recently finished my doctorate. I finished my doctorate like the end of 2021. And I was feeling down. I was like, man, like I did all this stuff and I still can't get in. And, you know, and I remember, so one of my contacts on LinkedIn, he's a career coach. He reached out to me and we got on a call and basically he gave me the advice to kind of look elsewhere, not to say that, you know, I can come back to it, but maybe to take a different direction, at least temporarily, and then I can always, you know, come back.
Circle back.
And so he was saying, like, you know, have you ever thought about like the intelligence agencies? And I was like, man, if I'm not getting into CISA, what make you think I'm gonna get into FBI or
right. NSA, the big leagues? Or
whatever? But I was like, well, at this point in time, I was like, you know, I'll try anything. I was like, all right, man, whatever, I'll do it. So I applied for like two positions, and one of the positions is the position I have right now with the agency. So, and then after that, man, I went back to him and thanked him, because if he didn't give me that advice, I would have never thought I had I would not have the confidence to even apply for a position like that. So yeah. I think just a lesson from that is to never, you know, don't doubt yourself. Like you have done a lot, especially, and I'm really talking with like those who have the experience, like you have done a lot. Don't put yourself down, or, you know, don't let anyone else try to tell you that you can't do it or whatever the case is. But I think the biggest thing is too, is we do have that internal voice that will stop ourselves before anybody else does. And sometimes our internal voice can be so detrimental. So we have to make sure we also put in our internal voice in check too, regardless of what other people say. But, yeah, I went back, thanked him. We went out for drinks because to show my appreciation, and you know, we hung out. Very cool brother. And like I said, I always believe in, like I said, you know, giving people their flowers while they're still here. I think that was just something that I really learned even from the pandemic, from 2020, since on then, you know, just knowing the fragility of life. You know, we shouldn't praise people after they're already 6 feet in the ground. I think they want to receive those accolades while they're still here to receive them. So that's always been something that's been in my mind now, is to, you know, if someone's helped you, someone who's done something good for you, someone who's made an impact in your life, whether big or small, let them know. Don't just take it. I mean, but also just let them know like how they've helped you and what they've done to help shape your life, your career. And that way they could also know that what they're doing is good work, and they could also help others along the way, you know, other people that are coming along in their careers as well. So it's very important to recognize those who, like I said, helped you or done any sort of impactful thing in your life or career.
Yeah, man. Yeah. That's the way. That this is the way, for sure. Hey, so Joseph, we appreciate that, man. We appreciate that explanation of your journey. More to come. And with that, we'll try to encourage everybody to enjoy and have a happy Veterans Day. And we'll close out with that and stay tuned for the next one.
Absolutely. Everyone,
have a good one.
All right, y'all.